I'm Brad.
I'm Scott.
I'm Buck.
Welcome to Curiosity.
And we're here with Chris Buckner.
Is that the first time that somebody has interrupted intro?
Okay, good. Because we don't tell anybody about it. It's just like some people are like, they like stop like halfway through because like then Brad will jump in.
But yeah. Steve definitely leaned in with us.
He also
started interviewing us on the show as well.
Oh, that's good.
It's great.
Yeah. We've been looking forward to this discussion though, man, because we kind of did like a Under the Influencer episode with kind of Curiosity featured, and which was awesome. It's like a visual masterpiece. Yeah. I think that the way that it like worked out visually is awesome. So we're excited to have you on, man.
I'm glad to be here because y'all are the grown-up version. Like Lawson and I always joke about this. Y'all are the grown-up version of our show where you actually talk about things that like matter or just like inspire or whatever. Ours is, let's have a couple drinks and then let's see if we can get the guests to laugh. That was it.
And we love Lawson. We've sort of strategically not brought him in here so we can like corner you and see how deep we can
go. How much I hate his guts.
Yeah, this is actually an intervention.
It's fine. I need it and I'm okay with it.
Let's bring him in.
Oh my God, there he is. Yeah, and not to one thing I'll say is I still believe with all my heart and soul the discussion that we had on the Under the Influencer about the aliens was my favorite question that's ever been asked on the show. I could have talked about that for like 5 hours. God, I love that stuff. But I was cracking up watching it, just the stuff. So it's good, so good.
It's something I've actually thought about is since that question has been posed, like how would we be perceived?
And what great timing with all the stuff that's floating. We got balloons. We got UFOs being shot down. Yeah. It was good timing. Maybe it was a precursor or like a Nostradamus type thing.
It very well could be. There's so much happening right now.
There is.
Are you scared a little bit about it, though?
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I don't think fear is useful.
Boy, I wish I lived that life.
But like, I don't know. I wouldn't worry about it.
I don't worry that there's like a creature that's going to, you know, come down out of the sky. But I am just like, what is happening? Like, what's sneaking in right now? And y'all know me. I hate politics more than anybody on the planet, which is not a good thing. Apathy is a horrible thing when it comes to politics, but I'm just not educated enough. But I do. You see the balloon get shot down, then something over Alaska, then over Michigan. And I'm just like, we haven't heard about this in a long time. Why is it at least now being like brought up so much? So I don't know.
Oh, great. Now we're getting into conspiracy theories. Wow, we're just...
I mean, you don't believe in any conspiracy theories, Brad?
I love it. Yes, please. Because I'm trying to think if I have one.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
Well, no. I mean, there's a comedian out there that's like, you think the government's just batting 1,000?
Yeah.
That there's believe not in, anything that's out there?
I mean, believe in is a loaded question by nature.
Well, for sure.
Do I think that humans are intelligent enough and coordinated enough to master plan major events? No. I think we have too much ego, too much greed, too much pride. And I don't think we're smart enough as a species. Do I believe that things happen and sometimes it doesn't work out in the most idealistic way of how we would have hoped? Also, equally agree, because we're humans.
Yeah.
So, yes, I would say that's how I perceive it.
Yeah.
But I always am fascinated by the connecting the dots backwards, which is effectively what a conspiracy theory is.
Sure.
Really easy to do. I would love to see a scenario where someone is a coordinated effort at a national or global level is intelligent enough and secretive enough to not at some point brag on their accomplishment or their statement or what they've done. I find very unlikely that humanity at large is that coordinated and that sophisticated.
I would tend to agree. You know which one that if I had to just like say is I don't know. I do think the TikTok conspiracy, there's some it's at least interesting to think about the stuff is being pumped in, you know, from who owns it now? What company in China owns Tencent?
Yeah,
it's not Tencent, is it? It doesn't matter. And
it's China.
It is China. And
not Tencent.
But I the other day I had it for a little while. Have y'all ever been on it?
So
don't ever get on it.
Okay, so I have an account.
Yeah.
And one day I attempted to get on, but it was connected to my Bluetooth speaker in another room, and looking at it without sound really didn't do any justice. And so I closed it and I never opened it again.
I sent you a link.
Bite Dance.
I sent you a link. What is that?
Is the parent.
Oh, by the way, Scott's role, in addition to being an amazing co-host, is a fact
research?
Checker.
Yeah. Okay.
He does all the fact checking in real time. He fact checks me often, which I'm batting. Not quite 1,000, but about 999.
Not quite 1,000. We're always like in the zip code, but yeah. It's always kind of fun. I don't want to leave like sort of like false information lingering out there for too long.
Oh, okay, it's amazing. Well,
this is not fake news. So I'm kind of joking about this, obviously, a little bit. I think there's something to it. And the reason I uninstalled it completely, because it's the most addicting thing that I've ever. I don't have any problems with like, I can put down the bottle. I've never been into drugs. I like that kind of stuff. That thing is addicting. But the other day, this is a true story. God, what a terrible story to tell. But I was in my house, and y'all ever shop at Man Ready Mercantile? You and I do, right? Man
Obviously.
Ready, you know about it. Okay. Yep.
Oh,
awesome little store here in Houston. Yeah,
shout out to Man Ready Mercantile. Yeah. We love you.
Yeah. We had him on the show.
Thank you for what y'all are doing.
And
he's a good dude. I've got to know him over the years.
High-end, cool clothing, drinks, blah, blah, blah. It's like a dude store in a way.
What's super cool about it is they really provide a marketplace for small designers and creators to have a space where they get to promote and sell.
It's like a brick and mortar Etsy.
Yes.
Yeah. A really badass brick and mortar Etsy.
I keep pointing at you a lot.
It's such a cool store.
Okay, but so
it is funny that you're pointing at like legit, like aggressively, for those of you who are audio only, which is most of
our audience. I don't know why I'm doing this.
You're really getting pointed at right now.
But they're known, they got started off with the candles. And I love their candles. And I was in my living room, I promise this will be quick. And I recognized that two of my Man Ready, because they're expensive, two of my Man Ready candles were to the point where they were like not really going to light me more. Mm. They were that low. So I was like, man, how can I get a little bit more out of there? So I went and put it in hot water to melt the wax so I could pour them together to at least have a little bit more of a candle, right?
Sure.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
And
okay. I'm tracking.
Elizabeth, my girlfriend, came over and she made a comment like, it's time for you to get a new candle. And I said, well, actually, I mixed those two. And she goes, how did you do that? And I told her, I put it in a bowl. And I heated it up with hot water so that I could dump them together and whatever. And I am not kidding. Maybe 4 minutes later, I just quickly looked at TikTok and I opened it up. And the first thing was a guy taking two used candles, putting it in a bowl of hot water to mix them. And I went, that is it. Not, I know that it listens to everything. I know all that. But for it to know and pick up that much
so
and then
effectively
show me a video of a guy putting two candles in hot water to then mix them. I went, that's the most absurd thing ever.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's my TikTok story. That's my conspiracy theory.
So it raises a really interesting question. I think we need to be careful about how we define conspiracy theories versus just technology.
What we know.
Technology.
Yeah.
Because those are two very different things. Right. And then in the society we lived in today,
Brad?
You're on their
obviously. I try to be on the side of truth and facts.
Sorry, I'm steering this episode into like a totally random space, but it's fun.
But it is a really interesting point. And if we look at technology today and where we are, I mean, the conversation around generative AI, like the question I'm starting to ask is, how do we define intelligence today? Mm-hmm. What is human intelligence and what is artificial intelligence and other forms of intelligence? But if you really think about how society, and this is early stage thinking, but if you really think about how society defines human intelligence today, right? In the US, for example, we go to school from pre-K-ish, kindergarten through 12th grade. We then go to a technical trade. We go get a 2-year degree, or we go get a 4-year degree. We get an advanced degree, like a master's or a PhD.
Those are all the forms of education that are
forms.
Available.
Yeah. So that's the education piece of human intelligence. We take certain exams like the LSAT or the MCAT or whatever it might be.
Basically all like knowledge recollection.
Yeah. Lots of that. Right. And then we enter into the workforce in some capacity, as it could be a founder. It could be an employee of a company. It could be a variety. It could be a co-host of a podcast. It could be a lot of different things, right? and today, actually, there's way more cool roles. Just side note, I learned there is a 10-year-old who is a friend of my friend's who cuts virtual grass and makes like $1,000 a week.
Like in the metaverse?
Yeah, they cut. That's what they do. That's their 10-year-old side hustle. Wow, has the world shifted? Mm-hmm. So, you know, tangent aside on that part, think about all the different aspects of how we define intelligence today, the way you perform in your job, et cetera, sure. et cetera, right? And then enter generative AI. That is completely redefining what intelligence is. And the thing that came to mind for me is the famous Albert Einstein quote, no idea if it's actually true or not, but Einstein at one point was asked his phone number and he looks at the person interviewing him and said, why would I know my phone number? It's in the phone book.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much of human intelligence is shifting today where why would I know X? It's I can use generative 100%. AI.
Yeah, but isn't AI just also I mean, we use Midjourney, for instance, for a lot of our AI stuff.
And it's freaking beautiful, by the way. I love it. It's so cool. All the Tech Rodeo stuff looks freaking fire.
So much fun. And but it's taking stuff that it's able to find elsewhere to put that together. And I understand it's learning. And is it Turing or Turing? I always mispronounce it, the Turing test, right? Where that's how you're able to find out if something's AI is whether or not in a blind setting, you're able to tell whether this thing on the other side is a human or not. And if once a computer is able to trick the person that's not able to see them, that it passes the Turing test and we've reached AI. And that happened, whatever, 1957, 59. Mm. And if y'all want to ask fear, I worry about a lot. And I fear, and it is actually a real fear, and it's absurd, is they're saying we'll reach a singularity in 7 years, right? And singularity is the moment in which we can no longer stop technology from moving forward. Mm. Meaning right now we can...
It'll self-perpetuate.
Exactly. So like the perfect example of that would be something like Manhattan Project. We at any time could stop the Manhattan Project from moving forward because as humans, we were like, okay, this is getting out of control. And that was discussed so many times during that, which was like, do we stop this? Because I have become death, the destroyer of worlds, Oppenheimer said. And it's like... Why are we farting around with this stuff where, and I know I'm getting a little off topic, but everything revolves around the AI and the education is like, one, I'm scared. I'm like, is my thinking going to become obsolete at some point? Two is if we know that we're reaching the singularity in which we cannot control the speed at which technology advances, shouldn't we maybe try to find a way to stop it a little bit, which it goes completely against what we do as humans. And then the great filter, like we talked about in the last show, which is Fermi paradox, which is every civilization. The reason we don't see other civilizations out there in space is they've all reached a moment where they say, well, if we push this one button, we're going to fix all of our problems. And that button maybe is AI, right? Which is like, well, we're going to reduce the need for workforce. We're going to reduce blah, 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 blah. And then it ends up getting out of control. So if you want to know my weird fear and not a conspiracy, it is that where I'm like, can we maybe like slow down a little bit? Because at what point do we reach Skynet and all of a sudden it's like, nah, we got this. And then the computer realizes, man, that human, the human existence, they're really doing some crappy things to Earth or themselves or whatever. Mm. Let's go ahead and wipe them out real quick just to get it back to normal. I know it sounds like Terminator 2, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. Or the Matrix or
Avengers.
You can say anything.
So many examples.
I love thinking about that stuff. But when it comes to like AI, Tech Rodeo, we did all those things. And honestly, for a little bit, I went, this is putting somebody out of a couple hours of work, their job.
Sure.
That really did go through my mind. And
it's a good point.
But we find different ways. Right? Yeah. Like you find a different way to whatever. Like, guess what? I'll lean into my strategic partnership sales and that kind of stuff because I don't think yet a computer can handle that kind of stuff. But at what point can a computer handle all that kind of stuff, you know, sell for you and that kind of stuff?
Well, and then it has. Yeah. If you're a copywriter these days, you know, like with ChatGPT,
if you're an accountant, like
I had ChatGPT write a 20-line haiku poem for my wife for Valentine's Day.
It did work.
And it was fantastic. And I just hand wrote it in a card. It took 5 seconds for it to generate. And I just wrote it in a card. And she was like,
oh, my God,
like totally fell for it. was like, how, like, that's amazing. Like, well, then I was just, and then, you know, on the back of the card, I wrote like, you know, ChatGPT, like, you
power,
know,
get,
powered by ChatGPT. But like, if you're a copywriter or you're, you know, the ability to put together narrative text, like that's going to, that will change. And like your ability to like activate that.
So this is kind of full circle, right? And this is really my point around how do we define intelligence today and how has reality shifted, right? It's almost like saying 2019 still exists. No, it doesn't. Pandemic changed everything. Okay. We don't have to acknowledge it. We can keep pretending like we're going to quote unquote go back to, you know, life as usual in a lot of quotations. But the reality is everything has changed. Things like generative AI are here. The world has shifted and changed. And so I think we have an opportunity to either react to it and try to do what we've always done historically, which is dig our boots in the dirt, roll up our sleeves, and fight against it with everything in our being because it's a threat to the world we know, or we embrace it. And we say, what needs to be true today in the reality and the constructs that we live in, and how do we want to shape this differently? There's also a responsibility as creators and makers of these technologies to be ethical and high moral ground around how we utilize this differently. So, you know, I can give a quick example as a creator. Like, I can either say, oh, this is a threat to my passion, or I can say, maybe my role needs to change. Mm-hmm. I now have these tools available. Maybe I need to be the architect of bringing the different AIs together to create something way more awesome than what I can create on my own. So I need to work with ChatGPT and Midjourney and pick your favorite AI video production software. And I need to orchestrate all of that into a beautiful symphony that can then unlock something even more awesome than what I can create on my own. So I almost feel like it can be an opportunity for us to just think a little differently about how we leverage these tools to make a bigger impact or bring some inspiration or some delight to humanity or whatever your goal is, right? But we always, I mean, historically, I use the term always very intentionally. Every time there's something new that comes into society, we immediately see it as a threat with our scarcity mindsets and our fight versus flight wired brains and try to obliterate it and try to keep it out of our life instead of just embracing it. Like, put all that energy into figuring out how we do it rather than if we do it.
I agree. I think it's all opportunity. Let me be clear. Would you agree with the statement that a middle schooler today is more intelligent than a doctor of 50 years ago?
I would say the access to information is greater. And if you know how to tap into that information, and we're defining intelligence differently.
Yeah, you're going right down the... You made a comment just a little bit ago. It's, you said something about recollection, right? Or whatever, when you're studying for, to become a doctor.
Yeah, it's just the ability to...
It's the ability.
Recall and information that you've saved. But outcomes matter.
Yeah. And yes, I'm being very flippant in that statement of like, is a kid smarter than a doctor? No, because the kid doesn't have the experiences of the wins, losses. Well, you know, you can go to all that stuff. But dear God, even me, I look at, and hey, boy, we're getting old when we start doing this. Like, I think I'm a decently tech savvy person. And then I hear a story about a kid who's cutting grass online. And I'm like, I would never think to go after that opportunity.
No, I wouldn't even know that. I didn't even know that existed. Yeah. And I feel like I am deep in the tech space in a lot of ways. I'm always hearing
that, like,
the newest,
bleeding edge
thing.
Kind of set of activities. Like, I mean, that's like, that's a different world. I mean, I've got a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old and like no doubt that that kids in that space tethered to a smart device are able to, their brains are wired differently because they don't need to memorize the capitals of the U.S. states. They can just look it up. Like, they don't need to like bother themselves with
maps,
with like that kind of like basic intel. And so I suspect that at some point, you know, they'll do research to sort of see that brains are wired differently and that like they're. And so it's kind of a question of like, OK, well, what what are the new outcomes and skill sets that that is facilitating? Mm-hmm. A lot of it is wasted on just like entertainment, mm-hmm. like an endless TikTok reel is not delivering any particular outcome. So you have this capability, but in many ways it's wasted, or all the extra spare time is just funneled into what we like to call in our house buffering.
Yeah.
Is you're just,
could we start calling it buckering?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do have that. Like I have ADHD like y'all wouldn't believe. And it's so addicting, y'all. I'll sit there and not even know. I uninstalled it for good.
And, no, I'm the same way.
But it's so good and predictive of what you want to see at what time of day. Like,
and it knows, thematically aligns, and it brilliant. Knows if you're hesitating for an extra second on it or not. And it puts more stuff in the queue. Well, I mean, we could probably like, and maybe we should spend more time talking about it, but I came here with like one question for you.
Oh, so I'm we're going. Like, well, can we wrap this and then go to the one question? Because I think this is really interesting. I want to say two different things that just my neurostorming is happening right now. And I want to honor
just
that.
Just like make some statements.
Yeah. I think one, TikTok's a great example, right? Like we don't love it because it's owned effectively, right, by a company in another country. But if we put ourselves aside for a moment and we just think about how fascinating the technology is and how intuitive it is. Like Scott was given an example recently about how someone was traveling to a destination. I'll use 30A in Florida because I like 30A a lot. I'm going to 30A and I'm going to Rosemary Beach and I want to know things to do. Like young humans go to TikTok to find out things to do and get an instantly curated list of really awesome things to do.
That's the new not Google.
A list of things that Google provides, right? ChatGPT similarly gives you really great insight into things that you want to know.
Can I interject? Because I just used it for that purpose during Halloween.
Yes.
I wanted to do a Stranger Things kind of vibe deal. And so go to TikTok and search Stranger Things Halloween decorations. And you could take a reel of tin foil and plastic wrap and make the vines. And like it worked awesome. And like I just used it like it was Google. But instead of the getting to a stack of websites to go to, it just instantly starts playing exactly what I need.
Exactly.
Like what you're talking about. Like if you had a need to like, how do I consolidate my candles?
Mm-hmm. It got it. It figured it out.
You should have recorded yourself doing it. You would have gotten the likes.
I think I'm just done.
Yeah. Well, sorry, I used it for that purpose.
And I don't have social media now anymore. Except like I told y'all, the only thing now is LinkedIn.
Here's what I found.
Oh, listen. Oh, that was that. That was perfect timing.
That's amazing. That just happened. That was not planned.
What did you just find?
And you know, you can turn off the microphone on.
I don't give access to all it. Of I your, never gave access to it anyway.
Oh.
Yes.
But you should check and see. Well, you already deleted it, but deleted more than likely the microphone was on.
It's gone.
Because normally that's kind of why it is that way. Second thing I think is really interesting here, right, is everything has changed. But as society, especially those in the adult universe, right, maybe 18, well, probably not 18 plus, but like millennial forward, Gen Z, probably less so. Like, I think we have to all pause from, you know, baby boomers to millennials and all the amazing humans in between and say, the world has changed. We need to stop trying to put what we know reality to be on younger generations and pause long enough and sit in the power of the pause to ask ourselves, what is relevant today and what is not? Education is different. Like young humans don't need to know the same information that we needed to do through rote memorization. The way the workforce operate has changed. A summer job is different.
Mm-hmm.
I can cut virtual grass in the universe. I was talking to a guy the other day. He has one son who's a famous YouTube star and he's like 13. One's 13 and one's 16. I don't know which one's which. And then the other son is a famous metaverse musician. Like, and they make serious money at 13 and 16 year olds. So like, even the concept of a summer job, like I worked at Kroger and then Chili's as a host, like that's what you did as a summer job, right? And if you were cool, you probably worked at like a pool as like a lifeguard. But, you know, I was kind of chubby when I was younger, so I didn't do that job.
And it is cool because it does give it, there's more opportunities than ever.
And so like there's just, we have a lot of lived experiences that we are now trying to impression on younger generations. And I think it's also partly our responsibility to pause ourselves and kind of challenge ourselves a little bit to say, like, what is relevant today and what is not? And there's always going to be noise and things we need to filter in and filter out. And there's definitely base principles that I think you have to have in societies in order for societies to thrive. Like some institutional aspects of a society can be healthy. Everything's not, doesn't need to be villainized, but also like probably an opportunity to evolve and iterate some.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the one thing that I think is important to communicate as we go on this journey. And now, Scott, I'm beautiful nervous. Question.
Is this
No, it's real simple, Buck. It is, what is the meaning of life?
That's so simple.
But what is like the meaning of your life?
It's so weird. Maybe y'all had told me that this was part of the show or something, but I was talking to somebody about this not 2 days ago, 3 days ago. And I hope I'm the first person to say this, but I also hope I'm the last person to say this, that like I have no effing idea what my why is, what the meaning of life is. I struggle with it every day. I love what I do now with the stuff that I'm working on, but I still am like, there's no way that this can be everything. There's no way that my life is meant for waking up far too late. I mean, I see how many kids you have. Four kids.
Yeah.
How many kiddos you got? Yeah, I thought you had one.
No, Scott and I aren't having kids.
I wake up at 7 every day, and I hear about, like, my friends are like, yeah, I got up at 5 for the kids. And I go, that would be so much more productive if I could just get up a little bit earlier. I go to bed at like 10. It'd be so much more productive if I went to bed at midnight. I get plenty of sleep or all this stuff. I wake up and like, I don't have this answer besides like the only thing I can come up with is there's only really one type of person in this world that I really struggle with. And I can name you the four people that you're never supposed to hate anybody, right? Ever. But I can name you the four people that I consider my mortal enemies. No, I'm not going to do it on the show. And all four of them lack.
This is a safe space.
Yeah, right. They lack empathy.
We just like beep it out.
Like, yeah. They
could
significantly, you guys know two of them.
Wow.
You know one probably really well. But they lack this empathy.
Kidding, buddy. We love you.
When I think about like the meaning or whatever, I just keep kind of coming back to like, I've got to get to being a better person. Number one, I just have to. I used to be. So in high school, I was in JROTC. All right. Mm-hmm. And which is like, you think about it, it's like dorky, right? In a lot of different ways. If I got to go back in time and I was starting freshman year, I'd do it again. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I we got made fun of all the time. I didn't care. I loved everything about JROTC. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that like, I liked a little bit of structure and I liked a little bit of this and I was able to move up quickly. But like, I was a nice guy. Okay. And I'm not anymore. And what I mean by that is not self-deprecation. This isn't like I'm realizing now, like, I've got to fix this because I think one of the most important meanings of life is just like, be freaking good and like, be good to each other.
Mm.
And in high school, this girl walked up to me in the hallway. This is a true story. And never seen this girl, never met her, anything. And she walked up. I went to a really big high school. And she just walked up and she was very emo. And I'm not trying to like be
just paint a picture, just paint a sharing picture. The facts.
She was very emo and like makeup, dark makeup, all that stuff. And she says, hey, Buck, I just want to let you know, you're going to have a lot of people at your funeral. This is what she says. And at first I was like, what is that? Like, what do you mean?
Should I be concerned?
No, for real. And it was really more
this
about
impending
like,
doom. Yeah, that's like, coming. It was. Do you have a date? Schedule?
Can you give me some heads up here? I can go get a Ouija board if we need to go.
You invited them all already?
But, I was in like, I did the whole
RSVP list is through the roof.
Okay. And, but the reason I bring that up is that may have been true back then. I almost cussed. Nowadays, like, I don't know how many people come to my, and this is not like meant to be like sad time or whatever. The meaning of life to me has become like, first, you need to get yourself right. And second of all, you need to get like, you just need to be a better person. And like, we talked about this on multiple times in different scenarios, but like, I don't consider myself a religious person. I think, but I love religion, if that makes any sense, where it's like, I definitely do not adhere to a religion. I just think they're all so cool. And I think they're all so necessary. And by the way, yes, are there some that I'm like, no, that's crazy and don't need to go into any of these? And then I go, but am I being hypocritical? Because that's what they think. And why am I, you know, like blah, 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 blah. And so I struggle with that. And maybe curiosity is the meaning of life.
It was a loaded question.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
We were waiting.
Just
for
say
it.
Curiosity, you jerk. So I've really been struggling with this, that I really truly did have a conversation with somebody a couple of days ago that I said, if somebody asked me like what drives you, like I don't care about money. Don't get me wrong. Of course I want to make money. And of course I want to like,
yeah, but it's not what you're solving for.
Yeah. Like I don't get like all jacked up when we sell a sponsorship or whatever. I don't get jacked up when, meaning me personally, where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to make some money on this deal. We don't, by the way, like we don't at all. So it's never been that. And like when we used to go through these scenarios in my previous two companies where you look and like, oh, on paper, I'm worth $5 million on paper. None of that ever did anything for me ever. So I sit back and I go, and I promise I'm finishing up my thought on this, is that I sit back and I go, well, I'm not really driven by money. I'm not very close with my family. So I wouldn't say like I'm a big family man. Do I want a family? Absolutely. But I'm not like, yeah, you know, what's going to drive me is all about my family. I don't want my kids to pay for college. I don't know if that counts, but like, I don't have an answer. Should I be concerned? Should I be like more introspective? Should I do shrooms? Should I do ice baths every morning? Like, it's become kind of like almost overwhelming to a point of like, I'm missing something that will give me the purpose that maybe I'm looking for. And I don't know. But I'm also weirdly, oddly comfortable with a lot of this because I'm like, well, I'll find it. Like, that's kind of part of the purpose is to
sort of
find
like
it.
The journey.
Yeah. It's like what if you were 5 years old and you're sitting there, you know, eating macaroni and cheese and, you know, drawing outside the lines. You all of a sudden went, I know exactly what I'm doing all the time in my life and I have everything figured out. Like, I think life would be kind of pretty boring after that.
Yeah, it'd be really mundane.
So maybe pursuit is the meaning of life. And it's, you could say the pursuit of money, you could pursuit of happiness, pursuit of any of these things, or like pursuit of the meaning, obviously. But maybe pursuit is like everything. Because the one thing I did learn in my time of like going to a, what do you call it, like a counselor or a therapist was like, you know what I found out with you, Chris, is that you'll accomplish something and then you find a way to find something else that's wrong. Mm. Like, meaning like you'll do something. And the example I'll give really quickly is I'm not very close with my family, but one time I did this interview and it's just like a, you know, video interview or whatever. And my older sister wrote me this long message saying like, you're an inspiration to me. And we don't talk like that. In our family, do not like at all. And I took that and my first thought was, I haven't done anything. Like, don't, because then I'm just going to be a failure to you if I don't do what you think that I've done.
And the expectation.
The expectation. And so like, I kept being like, all I'm doing in life is I'm building this pedestal. And the more I build on it, the bigger that fall is going to be. And my therapist is like, oh my God, we need to fix that. Like, that should be priority number one. Cause it was like, but weren't you happy that somebody asked you to do an interview? And I was like, well, sure. That was great. It was awesome. And they were like, then just take it for what it is. Yeah. And then she did a great job of saying like, what do you care if your sister's inspired right now? She started her own company, by the way. And they were like, so what? You fail. Do you think that your sister's going to give a crap if you fail, you know, at your next venture or whatever it was? So like, pursuit. There you go. Boom. Hard stop.
So I have a couple of thoughts on that, right? I think the first one is I've been reading a book with my meditation called 100 Days to Brave. Phenomenal book. And the one I've been kind of spending time on. It's not going to take me 100 days. It's going to take me far longer because I spend a
week. You're still on day 11?
I am on day 12 right now.
Okay. Yeah. So this one's different? You haven't shared it on the show?
Yeah. Yeah. This is new. Okay. So this is Like What You Like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then each one has an excerpt that goes with it, right? And the verse for this one is, "But God did not give you a spirit that is timid, but rather one of power, love, and self-discipline." And then she goes through this whole narrative about going into junior high and choosing between orchestra and band and deciding whether she wanted to play the cello or call it the flute. I don't remember exactly what the instruments were. And she did that in junior high. She chose the band because she liked, e.g., the flute better, whatever the actual instrument was. And then when she got to high school, she quit because it was uncool. And she says, I love this statement, and I'm going to summarize it, but she effectively says, "Man, I wish that only happened when I was a kid, but I find myself as an adult making the same decisions based on not what I like, mm-hmm. but based on what I think I'm supposed to like mm-hmm. or how I'm going to be perceived as cool." Think, yeah. And so much of what you shared just now, I think, is a testament of that in a cool way with your JRTC example mm-hmm. that you just did it because you loved it. And if you did it again, you'd do it every time because you just enjoyed it.
I did.
And we allow so much of perception of reality. And I heard this thing one time. We perceive ourselves how we believe others perceive us. Mm-hmm. Not even how they actually perceive us.
Yeah.
And if we go a little deeper into that, which is kind of to your second point on the other side of the spectrum of quitting the band, so to speak, example. And, you know, the validation from others, which I am absolutely that human. Words of affirmation is my number one love language. And I believe most often when words of affirmation are number one love language, at least for me, it's because there's a lot of insecurities within self that I haven't really overcome yet. There's a lot I have. There's a lot I haven't.
You derive value out of validation, external validation.
Yeah, because yeah,
I'm the same way.
And the reason I do that. That's
probably why we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, I think that might be
okay,
it.
But I hate it. And now y'all are making me concerned.
Yeah.
I hate validation.
Well, but let me explain a little more, right? As to why. Because I've spent a lot of time on this. I don't value validation to boost my ego.
Mm.
Does it feel nice? Obviously, mm-hmm. because I love words of affirmation. I value validation because it's my benchmark. It's how I'm able to see, is the thing that I'm doing actually doing the thing that I believe it can be doing? Or am I missing the mark? Because mm-hmm. if I'm missing the mark and the feedback, it's basically about feedback. Mm-hmm. If the feedback I'm getting in real time isn't positive, then that is a good indicator for me that maybe I'm missing the mark a bit on the path that I'm choosing or the thing I'm wanting to do or trying to do. There's a whole nother narrative, though, that says, brush all of that off the literal and the metaphorical table and don't even concern yourself with that. It's like we had Dave on recently and he's talked about an example of a friend of his who had cancer starting at 68, lived to be 80, ran a 100-mile race through Utah and then a 150-mile race through Utah, and tumors just fell off his body. And his whole point was, you're always winning at the game of life. And that is a very different narrative than what I have told myself is value, which is why words of affirmation have always been so important to me.
I think he said it was a little bit differently. You're always winning the game you're playing.
I love that too.
Yeah, I like that.
That was sort of that's the phrase that he said, is that there's a subtle difference to
it. And then that goes to like a Simon Sinek perspective on infinite game, which is this idea that, you know, life is the infinite game and it's an echo that lives far beyond self. And but in society, what we've taught ourselves is I aced the exam. I got a B on the exam. I passed the exam. I failed the exam. There's constantly this discourse that's happening in our brains and in our lived experiences that is right and wrong, good and bad, correct and incorrect, instead of just it is what it is and it'll be what it'll be, and be on your journey and be confident in the journey that you're on and be introspective, get under the ice cap of our humanity. Bob Goff, I've talked about that one many times, one of my favorite stories ever. I'll share it with you very quickly, but this guy...
No, we have it on every episode. So do you want to tell it again?
Yeah, I think so. This is this is like my top hakes.
We'll just get
top hakes. Like, very quickly, this guy flies in on a helicopter.
Can I try and tell the story? I think I've got it enough.
Oh, okay. Let's see.
Guy shows up. He's in Alaska. Helicopter lands. takes them to a place and it's like under this glacier. And like they have this like moment of like discovering the unknown. Mm-hmm. And like so the kind of the catchphrase of like getting under the ice cap of your humanity is like exploring, like being open to exploring the unknown of like your own
and the uncomfortable.
Experience.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was beautifully said. Like the dark places within our own being. And I think the more we can shed light on those and come to terms with those, call it insecurities or tensions or resistances within ourselves, the more likely we are to see the world a little differently, which I think is powerful. And instead of always having to be right or wrong, good or bad, my way, your way, us versus them, like a lot of what you shared just made me think, what if instead we changed our point of view to just be like, this is who I am. This is the journey I'm on. And I'm going. Whether you want to join me or not is totally up to you. But I'm going full speed ahead because I have deep conviction that this is the thing and these are the things that I need to be doing every day of my life to fulfill the potential of my existence and ensure that the impact I have is an echo that'll resound into the universe for hopefully ever. Just such a different way of thinking, right?
Well, so an unpopular opinion that I also been thinking about is like, you can, do y'all ever get on Reddit? Which, boy, by the way, that's
sure
not much better. But Reddit is okay to me because it's completely anonymous. I almost said anonymous. It's completely anonymous, so it isn't as much about people like the self-masturbatory, like I'm awesome. That a lot of social sure. that comes with social media, and that's what I really just get tired of. Is like I know how hard a crazy story. I think I'm gonna tell it.
It's about Bob Goff getting under the ice cap.
This story is so crazy. My stepbrother, and I know we got a little bit of time. My stepbrother, he's my age exactly.
There's no time frame in curiosity.
Okay. Except for, no, my stepbrother.
The fourth dimension falls away.
All right. I realized that Christopher Nolan was producing this one. But my stepbrother is exactly my age, just way more handsome than I am. Met his.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
That's possible. I'm so confused. Can we see a photo?
He looks like a little Brad, or a younger Brad Pitt. And I'm dead serious here. And he already has a big head, so it doesn't matter if I tell him this. We're really close. But he told me this story that it's – and he doesn't mind me sharing this. But, like, it's crazy that he had a friend that out of nowhere, they hadn't talked in years, called him and was, like, super angry at him because he was going through a divorce. My stepbrother's friend was. And he was, like – essentially, my wife is leaving me because she sees just how happy your family is, like on social, and constantly says, why can't you provide that to me, right? This is a true story. My stepbrother was going through a divorce at this time. Not only that, my stepbrother had like really, really, and I think great rules, essentially, that you could take a picture of the kids and stuff like that. You don't take a picture of the cars. You don't take a picture of the house. You don't take a picture of anything that's like that. I'm fine celebrating the family, but we're not doing the thing where whatever. And I always liked that, whatever. But he had a friend that did that. And I only bring that up because it's like, it's been my biggest problem with social, right, is that side of it. So like,
well, we only see the best of moments. Yeah. And by seeing the best of moments, and if that's all we ever see, then we believe for whatever reason, I don't know the psychology of it. I should probably learn it. Like that is the reality of that family or that person or that life. And then we look at our life and we don't see the same things, which is, you know,
it's not apples to apples comparison.
No, it's like not
at all.
You're comparing your worst or average to somebody's curated best.
I tried to start this big push. Yeah. Right.
There's an app for it.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Is it still around?
It's still there.
The whole purpose is it tells you when you're going to get to take your picture.
Yeah.
And it's just in any moment to show what's really going on. It's called Be Something.
Be More, Be Now, Be.
Yeah, it is something like that. Be Here, Be Something like that.
It's basically a curated group of friends, and at a particular time of day, you have to just sort of take a selfie.
Whatever it is.
Wherever you're at.
No makeup on.
But I did like
T-shirt, sweatpants, no makeup on.
I tried to do this thing like where for a short time on my social when I did have it, I would like take picture when my dishwasher broke me and like, oh, check it out, my dishwasher broke. Or like, oh, I got a flat tire.
I love it.
Just like, oh my God. But it will never take on because we all want, in some way, you say words of affirmation.
Yeah.
I words can't describe. I hate words of affirmation. It makes me feel uncomfortable because I'm bad at giving them. Like, I am not good at being like, hey, man, I think you're doing a great job, blah, 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 blah.
Thanks, Buck.
I am a physical touch person.
Be real?
Be real.
Be real.
Which, by the way, that's great. Like a real.
How did we actually miss that? That is so memorable.
So close.
Too. It's so sticky. We're like, be you.
It's authentic, you know, it's like in real time.
In real time. But anyway.
It's really awesome.
But all I was saying there was just like, going back to what you were talking about, like, I don't know what it is because, like, I like looking at words of affirmation. Oh, but the unpopular opinion. That's what I was going with Reddit. My unpopular opinion is, happens to be on Reddit, is like there's motivational quotes that we all see, right? Mm. All the time. And
sure.
And I always, my motivational quote is brevity is the soul of wit. It's not motivational at all. It's just my favorite quote. And it's meant to tell me, hey, man, you maybe shut up instead of always talking, which is what I've done this whole time, is just taking over. And
you're the guest. You're supposed to talk. Know,
like this is literally a platform for you to talk.
But I think motivational quotes are so freaking dumb. And here's what I mean by that. I think they're dumb in mass, where you're supposed to, anybody is supposed to read some quote and go, yeah, that does inspire me. When it's like, we all are going through like such different stuff. That if you see a quote that says, keep calm and eat marshmallows, maybe in that moment, like, that's the one that you're like, yeah, you know what? I do need to chill out and eat marshmallows. Hmm. And it doesn't always need to be this huge, like, massive, like, man, like, I used to love the quote, still do. My favorite speech of all time is Muhammad Ali when fighting George Foreman is right before the match. And he's going through the whole thing. He's like, I done tussle with an alligator, wrestle with a whale, handcuff, lightning, throw thunder in jail, if y'all have ever seen it. Mm-hmm. But at the very end.
God, he was such a freaking orator.
He says.
He was spoken word.
Just, yeah, what does he say? He says,
phenomenal.
Injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick. And, yes. But the very last thing he
kind
says.
Kind of reminds me of Beyonce. I coughed on the beat and the beat got sicker.
Or my favorite rap lyric of all time is, I'm about to call the paparazzi on myself. That's unbelievable. But my favorite quote probably of all time is very, very end of this statement where he says, I know y'all all picked him. I know you got me beat. And then he just says, I'm going to show you how great I am. And for a moment of my life, I know.
Ooh, does that give you chills? I can hear every inspirational video I've ever watched with that quote.
I know,
on
right?
It.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
With and some in phenomenal moment, voice and like, oh, it's beautiful.
In a moment, that's healthy and it's great and it's motivational and blah, blah, blah. But you know what that also does is there's other moments where that's not needed. I don't need to be trying to show people how great I am. Don't get me wrong. It still is one of my favorite quotes of all time.
Yeah.
But my unpopular opinion is like even self-help books, inspirational quotes, I think they're all so dumb in mass where it's like,
okay,
you don't need to be, everybody doesn't have to have something that motivates them that everybody sees as that's motivational over there. If you want to be motivated by something like obscure. So, and the reason I bring all of this up is like, I'm not a ferocious reader at all. I'm not, because I've always been like, well, that's my life. And I'm going through this journey, and what a short-sighted way to look at life, by the way. Like, it's not about that. It's about the education that comes along with reading. But I struggle with it because I'm like, no, I want my own story. And I want, like, I want to write a book at some point that's just, like, what not to do. Like, that's what I want my book to be. That's what I want my, is, like, I'm going to tell you guys how not to do it. Like, that's my greatest gift is I've gone through enough of, like, in work or love life or whatever it might be, like, obviously jokingly in some ways, but also like, I'm going to show you what not to do, because I think that would be helpful to people to see, like, oh wow, what a different approach. By the way, people have done this before, so
sure.
I think it went in a big circle.
The title of the book that I want to write is in the same spirit, is called How to Get Cancer.
Oh man, that is straight on the nose
of that sort of like same thing, because everyone's like had a fight, had to live with it, whatever, but it's like in sort of that same spirit, like write a book, how to get it,
yeah,
which is sort of like the,
wow, and you could do it as a, not a double entendre, it's an improper definition of that word, but you could also make it like how to get cancer, because even us just having that lunch that one time, I was just like left and I'm like, I just learned so much in this lunch that was so inspirational. You could make it where it's like how to get cancer, like you got it. Now I'm going to teach you how to get it, like how to get it, understand it, what to do, to, so you could do it like a
yeah,
double.
You can't get it without understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
And I then, like so I just had ChatGPT write an inspirational line about innovation as if they were Muhammad Ali. Are you ready for that?
Oh my gosh.
No way.
Innovation is not just about changing the game. It's about creating a whole new one.
That's not a real quote. That's no, ChatGPT.
ChatGPT. Just
wow.
So in the world of inspirational quotes.
Say it one more time.
Yeah, that's good.
Innovation is not just about changing the game. It's about creating a whole new one.
Whoa. That's interesting.
It's like,
it's so ridiculous.
At the same time, it's like, kind of pointless, but then also
it's great.
So I want to go to this real quick, right? Cause I think it's an interesting point, and it's like a yes and to your statement here. Okay. I hear what you're saying. I hear it a little bit differently though. Okay. See, I hear it as there's a plethora of quotes out in the universe. Mm-hmm. And there's moments in our journeys when some are going to be relatable to us, mm-hmm, and some are not.
Sure.
And I think that's kind of the beauty of massive amounts of content that exists today, mm-hmm, is we relate to what we relate to.
In the context matters.
Yeah.
Context,
yeah. And there's moments when some are really going to speak to me and moments when others are going to speak to me. Like there's one, since I was a child, I played baseball and loved baseball and it was so much fun. I actually went to the batting cages over the weekend. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that in a second, but I want to finish this thought. And the quote was, "You cannot possibly hit the ball if you're thinking about all the ways you can miss." Mm. And I was like, wow, that is so applicable to so much of, mm-hmm, life. Now, I will quickly say, okay, to every adult human on the planet, go to your version of the batting cages and see how much your childhood self is still very much alive within your being. Mm. Whatever those things are that you loved doing in your formative years, like, why did we as adults stop play? We do not play. We do not look at what children do. And then we wonder why we're kind of these boring creatures that at times get really wrapped up in ourselves. And our hobbies are go out to eat, go, mm-hmm, get a drink,
go get a drink,
like maybe go to like a Broadway show or a sporting event. Mm-hmm. But like, that's very passive in a sense, right? Where's our active play? We need to bring play back into our life as adults. It was the most fun time ever. Sky and I had a freaking blast. We went for an hour. I was sore for 2 days. Mm-hmm. My hands were killing me. I did crush the ball though, like almost every single time. It was so amazing. It only went up to 60 miles an hour. So, yeah, you know, there is that. I didn't get full. Oh, I was annihilating the ball at 60. I was wanting to see a 90 if I could even still hit it. But either way, it was just, and I'm not a very competitive person. So it's fun for that competitive spirit to, mm-hmm, like reemerge within self. But I highly encourage everyone to like, go enjoy play, mm-hmm, which kind of is the way I want to pivot to a question that I've been wanting to ask. We've been sitting here.
Real quick, Pocket Talk.
Yeah.
The fun part of Pocket Talk that isn't the B2B, the B2C side is called Pocket Talk Play. So there you go.
Okay. Well, let's do that. Anyway, I'm glad you dropped that.
Play matters.
I really want to know about Baby Buck.
Baby Buck?
Yeah.
Like what I was like as a kid?
Yeah.
I was good. I was, it's probably one of the reasons I struggle so much in my life. Is I was a good kid. Like,
define good.
I did everything right, and I literally,
like, obedient.
What's that? Very obedient.
Yeah.
Didn't drink, didn't party, didn't do anything to the point that my parents were like, "You gotta start doing some stuff, man. Like, you gotta start experimenting and like living life and like doing things." And my dad was even like, "Yes." I remember my mom would be like, "Go out to a party. Like, go do something." So I was a pretty smart kid. I'm not competitive either, that's for a whole nother episode, is I want to figure out like how bad that is that I'm very, very not competitive. Like I struggle with that. But I was the kid that was like, there was Jeff Manship, who was the fastest kid, and Brian Engle, the second fastest kid. I was always like the third, right? Like that's where I landed. I was third and fourth, right? Jeff Manship, by the way, pitched in the World Series.
That's
and
cool.
Brian Engle went to West Point, and he's probably a general now. So like,
I know that name. I don't know why, but like, there's no reason. I just know the name.
I was good. I was, my parents said I never cried ever. I just was always like kind of happy and like, I just did everything kind of the right way. And, it ended up becoming a big problem because my brother, I'm not at all close with him. I haven't talked to him in 13 years. Don't even know where he is. And for some reason, my like parents just, he was the golden child and like, he was a troublemaker. Right. And so it always used to like really bother me that I'm like, I'm doing everything right. Like everything right. Come on. But I don't know. I would almost say I was borderline boring, but like, you know, I did swim team and which was like my favorite thing in the entire world, and soccer and JROTC. And I was homecoming king and prom king.
This is not surprising whatsoever.
Well, it is surprising because, and I'm going to do this real fast. I got, what is that movie? She's All That, right? That's where she gets transformed.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I was in JROTC. I was friends with everybody in the school, meaning I like the band. I like the football team because my friends in the past were all athletes and stuff. I got along with everybody. I was not popular. I just got along with everybody. Hmm. And this guy, Mathis Kennington, we're still friends to this day. He was the popular kid. And when I say he was the popular kid, he was the most popular kid in the district. And it wasn't even close. And he was at school. And I always just be like, that guy is so cool. Like, look at him. How cool he is. And I swear to God, this actually happened. One night. Sophomore year, end of sophomore year, I'm sitting in my room. I'm watching Saving Private Ryan for probably the 500th time. I don't even know if I'm exaggerating. I love that movie.
It's a Friday great night. Film.
It's Friday night at 8 o'clock.
Sure.
I'm in high school.
You're in high school at this point. Yeah. Okay.
Great way to spend your time.
So this is beyond Baby Buck. We're not high school.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah. But real quick, it's such a hilarious story. I was a nobody, and I mean that sounds weird. I was very happy with where I was. I was very content.
Hugh, and that's all that matters.
So just like in a movie, I swear to God, this all actually happened. My door opens to my bedroom at 8 o'clock at night, and there's standing Mathis Kennington and then this girl, Janice, who lived down the street. And I'm like, hi. And my mom's like, hey, these people said they wanted to come hang out. And I'm just like, what's happening? And he's like, get out of bed. We're going to a party. And I'm like, and my mom's like, yes. So at 8 o'clock, I get out of party. He was like, you're a good person. Like, I know how good of a person you are, and I want more people to know it. And I'm like, why? Like, what is happening? Like,
and took you on as
over a year and a half. Yes. Over a year and a half. He took me to everything all the time. I didn't drink or anything, but he made me like this popular kid. And when I remember,
really is a film.
I know. And when I got Homecoming King, he was like, you piece of like, I was supposed to be Homecoming.
I was too good at making you two popular. I knew you were awesome. Everyone loved you. I didn't know they'd love you more than me.
I don't
me.
Know how he did it or why he did it. Or it's such a weird, weird thing. But I look back. I know that's not Baby Buck, but it's a really funny story. Like he did. He just like made me like popular.
Yeah, he just like took you like on as like a project.
Anyway, but I was a good, boring little kid.
What were some of your earliest moments of like curiosity?
Green belt. We had a green belt. And when I was like 5 or 6, I got my first like hatchet. Talk about safe, by the way. I got my first hatchet and would go chop down trees in this green belt and build forts and stuff. Tried to like sleep out there a couple times and got in big trouble with my parents.
So when you said green belt, I thought you meant karate.
But sorry, I was also
you're
a
talking
red belt.
Like green
belt,
forest.
Like the forest area back behind the neighborhood.
Got it.
And I'd go out there and chop down trees and like try to like create big
like
stuff
a
with
little,
my friends.
Like Eeyore, Winnie the Pooh, style too.
And we tried to build stuff and it collapsed. We got hurt. It's so hilarious. I was that way. I was never like the entrepreneurial kid that was like, I'm going to sell lemonade. I didn't have that in me. In fact, I didn't have that in me until I was really 29, which everybody's always surprised to hear that started, you know, a couple companies, but I didn't know I was going to even do that until I was like the late 20s.
Yeah.
So, that was probably the earliest 5 or 6 years old going and like camping on my own and that kind of stuff. I love that stuff.
And so in high school, you were in JROTC and you became homecoming king and Prom King, is that the...
It's on my LinkedIn.
That's amazing. That's going to be your new title at the top of your LinkedIn profile. Just upcoming Prom King.
It's so dumb.
And then you continued on that journey at A&M, and you were a Yell Leader.
Well, what's funny is I did JROTC in high school because I thought I had to be in the core at A&M in order to become a Yell Leader. That's how much I was brainwashed into wanting to go to A&M. I knew I wanted to be a Yell Leader when I was in fifth grade.
Wow.
So I was like, well, I'll just do the things that I think I need to do in order to get there, which is... And then I got into A&M. My dad's like... He loved the Corps, but he was like, you know, you don't have to be in the Corps to be a Yell Leader. I'm like, I'm sorry. The last 4 years of my life, I was in JROTC.
In order to be a Yell Leader.
Yeah, in order to be a Yell Leader. Yeah.
You were one of the only Yell Leaders to not be in the Corps. Is that correct?
There's only, I think it's at like 10 in the history of A&M have not been in the Corps. And I think, you know, listeners, there's no cheerleaders in A&M. It's just these five dudes and you're voted on by the student body. And it's cool because you get to go to every game, football, basketball, soccer, all of that stuff.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that for all 4 years or is that for?
No, it's actually you can only be a Yell Leader junior and or senior year. I ran for junior Yell, didn't get it, was the most devastated I've ever been. If you want to talk about religious stuff, I remember going the night of the elections because, I mean, this was my whole being was into winning.
Your entire life.
It's like a big deal.
Like culminated into.
Like, it's a really, I mean, I went to A&M. Not everyone knows that about me because I don't portray apparently a very Aggie persona. And we were there at the same time, actually. Yeah. And I mean, it's a big deal. Like, these people that want to be Yell Leader are campaigning. There's huge signs made out of like sheets.
Did you vote for Buck?
Bro, I don't know that I voted at all. Let's be honest. Right. I mean, I really was probably not the best. I used to always say I was a 98 percenter because there's a 2 percenter. Yeah. Today, it's bad. I mean, I'm not even, it never comes up in any conversation.
But
it
is right now, which is fun. Much
and I love that. So now that you're talking about this, I actually remember you being a Yell Leader and not being in the core. Yeah. We didn't know each other, but that was like a thing apparently. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
But, to wrap it up on the religious guy.
So you didn't get it junior year.
Well, I went to the church right before.
Okay.
This is
junior year?
Sophomore year for junior year.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And I go to the church, and I swear to God, this actually happened. I go into this church. I'm by myself. It's only an hour before. And I start praying to God, please give me this. This is how I asked. I was like, please give me this. Please, you know that this is my whole life, like everything. Well, I didn't get it, and it was devastating. And by the way, I got abused in the votes. The next year, I went to the church again, and this time I was like, hey, dude, just if I don't get it, help me not be a little bitch this time. Because like I cried so hard when I didn't get it the first year. The second year, I was like, hey, I know I did this wrong last time. That was really, really rude to ask you to give me something. So this time I'm just saying, help me get through it if I don't get it. And I attest that to one of the reasons I won. I did it right.
Your approach was very different.
Very different. Yeah.
Your heart was in the right place.
My heart was in the right place.
Yeah.
God knew that.
That's amazing. That's really fascinating. What was that like? Not being, do they call it non-reg? Is that the term? See, the term I was coming back to me. I'm totally here for it.
But it was the greatest year, and I can say this, it's greatest year of my life, even up to now. I mean, don't get me wrong. Of course, it's been great over the last, you know, whatever years. But it was just so cool. Like, they pay for everything. You travel. All you do is public speaking the whole time. You get to literally talk to 40,000 students on the midnight before the game, and you tell a funny story.
Midnight Yell. I was definitely there because I always went to Midnight Yell.
Oh, well, then you heard my story.
I mean, I camped out for my senior year. I camped out for tickets for every single home game.
You definitely.
And so I definitely was, and we always got the 40 or 50 yard line, second deck, front row. It was phenomenal. Could bang and
best
do the
in the
loops.
House besides mine because I was on the field.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
It was
you were.
It was everything.
That's amazing.
That's a cool experience.
And Midnight Yell is amazing because the lights go out at midnight and you get to kiss your date. Yeah. I mean, it's freaking phenomenal. Like, it's the best thing ever.
It is.
And when the Aggies score,
you score
because you kiss at every touchdown. Mm-hmm. So.
It was
there's a lot of kissing going on.
It was everything.
It's a very loving experience for us at A&M.
I did gain like 35 pounds though, because they pay for all your food. I gained so much weight that in the Holiday Bowl, I was on the field warming up with the team because I wasn't in the core. I got to do that kind of stuff. The core guys had to do like marching and stuff.
Oh, so you got to go like hang out.
So you're just kind of like,
yeah, I got to hang
you got
out.
To throw the ball?
Oh yeah, it was
who was
awesome.
Our quarterback
McGee,
our senior
Steve
year?
McGee,
oh yeah, that's right, Steve McGee.
And I'm out on the field and I'm throwing a pass. And I'm so fat at this point in the season that I throw a pass and my belt buckle, because you wear what looks kind of like a military uniform, but it's all white.
Yeah.
My belt buckle goes.
Explodes.
And I'm like, all right, well, time to start losing some weight. But it was awesome.
That is a side when you know
yep.
it is oh, time yeah. to start losing some weight.
It was bad.
Do we just close it on that?
I'm fine with that.
I mean, I want to ask one more question.
You guys are going to be late.
What are you most curious about right now?
Myself, I wouldn't say I'm like depressed, but I definitely am like really struggling with like, I got to change something in my, like, I want to get up early and I want to work out in the mornings and I want to like be more productive in things outside of work, because I've just, everything's work all the time. I dream work. I talk work. I have like this thing with Elizabeth where I try so hard that I'm like, we're not talking about work. Okay. Like, and I let her vent because I've vented to her for the last, you know, 9 years or whatever. But my curiousness, and I know it's very self-serving and selfish and everything's about like, me. I got to get that figured out about like,
you're in like a chapter of your life.
Yeah.
You're like done this like self-discovery.
Yeah. I'm in a bit of a rut.
Yeah.
And where I used to play guitar and sing at bars and like I was just much more.
That's
like,
cool.
Yeah. Big Woodrow's. I sang every Friday night.
Okay.
There.
But you know what though? I think that goes back to my whole commentary about play. Cause I was thinking about this over the weekend. Sky and I did our first staycation. We love to travel the world. That's our hobby in life. But over the next several months, we're like, let's enjoy Houston. We live here. Let's be here. Let's enjoy our community and do lots of cool stuff. And that was, to your point though, I think it's such an important part of our adulthood. Why do we not feel more alive on a daily basis? I think we're just freaking boring.
Yeah.
Like, ask a junior high kid if we're cool. And the answer is probably no, you're really boring.
Yeah.
Like, Sky and I were leaving the Arboretum the other day, and it was the cutest thing. There was this young girl, probably about 13 years old, with her parents, and the mob looks at her and she says, like, do you not want to go on a walk with us? And she's like, no, mom, walks are boring. And I'm just here because you're making me be here. And I was Sky and I were trying not to laugh, but it's like life through the eyes of a child and the honesty. And I'm like, I think a lot of it is just, we're just freaking boring people as adults. And we've told ourselves that we're cool and we're fun and we're interesting, but I'm like, are we? I don't know. I don't actually think, I thought I was pretty cool and interesting, but the more I'm exploring, like if I just would play more, I might solve for a lot of the insecurities that I feel and a lot of the things that I deal with on a daily basis. It's a total hypothesis. I don't know how accurate it is, but there is a lot of research that says endorphins free flow through play, which makes us happier humans. And we tend to be more alive in kind of our humanity in our daily life. And I just, like, I actually want to spend a whole episode on this. I want to bring someone in who talks about play and the power of play and how important it is. Because like you said, you've kind of stopped playing and you've lost some of your identity. I'm not saying it's the silver bullet to the universe, but
I
really do think it's, I don't know if silver bullet to the universe is something we should say anymore. It's probably not a very kind term.
But I will say this, my dad, to kind of wrap that up, is my dad said the scariest quote, I actually kind of mean it, to me, that I have ever heard him say. He didn't mean it as scary, he meant it as inspirational, and it scared the crap out of me. He said, I have never once in my life had a boring day, and he meant it. Wow. My dad was a dentist, okay? Like, whoa. And he said with every bit of his heart and soul, and I'm like, yesterday on Sunday, I took two naps. How have you not had a boring day? And he meant it. And I was like, I got to get this my crap together. Like, what can I do on every day to make sure that at least for that day, that time period wasn't boring?
So you're curious about getting introspective. I think that's a really beautiful journey to go on.
Yeah.
I started that journey December 17th, 2019. I'm still on it, but it's completely reshaped my humanity. I've gone from utter confusion to a level of clarity that has helped me rediscover my humanity and my values, and spiritually, emotionally, physically, intellectually, family, friends, life, balance, like where my priorities should be. It's been really, really incredible. Scott has had similar experiences through very different circumstances. But yeah, I think
just
it's important.
Say, like, it's like, that's okay.
Like, well, I know,
you know, it's like, there's no, you know, like you're saying, like the journey is like the sort of the point. Because like
the pursuit is the point.
And one of the side effects of so many things, like what we've been talking about, is like our access to so many potential realities that we could paint for ourselves.
That is it.
Is so damaging because you could never select right combination of all of these realities. And so it's how do you sort of become like
comfortable in your own,
embrace the present version of yourself.
Wow.
And accept the fact that you chose it, that like your present is the gift that it is. It doesn't need to be, it doesn't matter.
But I think that's what's so overwhelming is you nailed it. I'm looking at 10 possible realities.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to do that one and that one and that one. I want to be successful. Right. I want to have a family. I want to do this. I want to do this. And they all need to happen perfectly. How do I do that? Rather than being like, okay, well, it's okay to have goals, but you don't need to be like, am I always doing the right thing that's going to get me to that reality over there? And that's overwhelming.
So I got Sky the other day, a motivational kit. She's having a shift in life, work specifically. And it was Progress Over Perfection was the notebook. And that's hard for me because I have a good friend, Brad Deitzer. He owns Deitzer Consulting and has Clarity Institute. And he literally wrote the book on clarity. It's called Clarity. Mm. And, in his amazingly designed space. He is probably, like, in my mind, the most idealistic creative I've ever met. He knows how to apply it in ways that I can't even fathom. Like the poles on the roofing here, he will like write the story of a book on. I mean, it's just like amazing what he comes up with. And he has this one where it says good enough and it's on the floor. And I asked him one day, I was like, why is good enough on the floor? He said, because good enough fell on the floor, because good enough's never good enough. And that's my philosophy. I'm like perfection over everything.
Sure.
But what I'm learning is progress over perfection, like imperfection is perfection. Because that's actually realistic. Like, have y'all seen the Stutz documentary yet with Jonah Hill? Highly, 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 highly recommend this. It is one of the most beautiful perspectives of psychology I've ever heard in my entire life. This psychologist is like, just sitting there and listening to people talk is bullshit. I'm going to engage with them and give them actionable things they can actually do, because that's what a great therapist does. They become your best friend and treat you like a best friend. I'm like, yes, he is a disruptor in every way, a rebellious optimist, like phenomenal, phenomenal stuff. So in it, full circle, it's like what you like. And own that and live that reality for sure. So we close out every episode with a question, a question that we don't answer. Nope. We always like to ask the guests to provide a question to the audience, and it can be about anything. And we can riff on it together if need be.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to be. It's never like the first thing you say. It's just, but kind of based on the conversation, like is there sort of something that people should ask or think about, or that you want to think about? Or,
well, I mean, in an unhealthy way, I it's like always in my head, it's like, okay, what's next? Like I want to get a tattoo. Did we talk about this? I think you and I did at lunch.
Yeah.
Like, I want to get a tattoo, and
same,
it's gonna look horrible, but I want it to just be something. I don't know what it is. I if somebody has an idea, tell me. That every day when I look at it, it makes me go, like, be here. Like, be in this moment right now. Like,
I love that.
If I could tattoo it to my eyeballs, like, where I could just stop and be
just
like
a constant reminder.
Be here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, even now, you know, in my previous company, which was brutal, took years off my life, I've already been looking back being like, God, that was so cool that we got to, you know, we were the biggest, blah, blah, blah. You know, you do that stuff. And it's like, just appreciate it more, like, now. Appreciate it now. Because Tom Hanks, I just snuck Tom Hanks into y'all's show.
Beauty.
I feel very privileged right now.
Somebody asked him, what was his, what's one thing that he wishes he could have told his younger self? And he said, this too shall pass. I know that's a very common quote, but
that's
he
powerful.
Said that to himself, was like, this too. So I don't know. maybe it's what's next. And the reason I say that is, it's like we talked about AI. What's next in AI? Hmm. Maybe it's what's next. Like, stop thinking about what's next. Hmm. I don't know. The answer to that, because like anxiety is looking in the future. Depression is looking in the past. I know that's not the actual medical term. Let me be very clear.
Sure.
No, but I don't really have much problem. Like, looking to the, I hate nostalgia, so I don't have much problem there. Every single second of my life is living in the future.
So maybe it's around pursuit of the present, mm-hmm. or pursuit of being present.
Mm. How do we pursue the present?
Yeah. How do we pursue the present?
A big giant tattoo.
I kind of love that, actually. I think that's a great question.
Yeah.
What does it mean to pursue the present? How do we pursue the present? So maybe we could, are we inconsistent, or do we have consensus on how do we pursue the present? Wow, that's powerful. Boom.
God,
boom.
Can you give us a
life changing right now? Changing lives through a microphone. I am.
Can you give us a boom?
Boom.
Thank you for listening. Join Brad and Scott next time on the Curiosity Podcast.